Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Esther, chapter 4, verses 1 through 17. In this chapter, we will see Esther's cousin, probably her first cousin, Mordecai, persuading Esther to help the Jews. Why did the Jews need help? Because in the last chapter, chapter 3, Mordecai, Esther's cousin, an official of the Persian king, had refused to bow down with all of his fellow officials to Haman. King Xerxes, Ahasuerus, had commanded that all officials bow down to Haman as if he were some kind of a god. And Mordecai, being a good Jew, says, no, I'm not going to do that. The word got out. Haman goes to tell Xerxes, you've got to do something about this rebellious Jewish guy, Mordecai. And so Xerxes issued a decree that says that, well, lots were cast first. Pur, from which we get the feast Purim, in the first month of the 12th year of King Xerxes, who began his rule in 486. In the 12th year of that rule, lots were taken. And that was done in Nisan of that 12th year, and the date for execution was decided to be Adar the 13th, which is the 12th month of that year. So there's a year in there between the casting of the lots and the date of execution of the Jews. So that's our context. So now we go to Esther 4, 1 through 3. When Mordecai learned all that had been done, in other words, he'd learned about this decree that's going to get all the Jews killed in a year, he tore his clothes, Mordecai did. He put on sackcloth and ashes and went out into the midst of the city and wailed loudly and bitterly. He went as far as the king's gate, for no one was to enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. In each and every province where the command and decree of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many lay on sackcloth and ashes. Verse 1, when Mordecai learned all that he had been done, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that he was probably one of the first to hear about the decree. After all, he was close to the king. He was a king's official. And the decree was issued because of Mordecai's actions. So I'm sure that he was informed very quickly. This is what you've done, Mordecai. He's grief-stricken, and so he wears sackcloth and puts ashes on his head. That's the universal sign of intense grief in the Middle East, of course. Sackcloth is made from goat or camel hair. It's called sackcloth because they made sacks out of it, and they probably put grain in the sacks. The goat or camel's hair, it was coarse and black. It's probably very uncomfortable. Now Mordecai goes out into the midst of the city. He was at the king's gate, the palace gate, and he goes out into the city of Susa, and he starts wailing loudly and bitterly. Now, what he's doing here, he has publicly proclaimed his affinity for the Jews. The average Persian might think, well, this is bad, but they're not going to go out in public and cry about it. But this shows that Mordecai was personally attached to the Jews. He was a Jew himself. He may have even felt a little responsible for the disaster. I mean, after all, it was because he was caught not bowing down to Haman that this edict came out from Xerxes. But of course, we have to remember that Mordecai, as a Jew, had no choice but to refuse to bow down, because a Jew can only give sovereign allegiance to one God, Yahweh. So he's wandering around in the city square, in the midst of the city, not the city square, I'm sorry, but just in the middle of the city, crying, and then he goes to the king's gate. That's to the king's personal palace. He can't go any further than that because there was a rule that you couldn't go in there clothed in sackcloth. That's because the king only wanted happy thoughts in his presence, and sackcloth is sad, and we can't make a Persian emperor sad. Why was Mordecai going to the king's court? Well, John Gill speculates he wanted to let Esther know what had happened. I think that's reasonable. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown suggest that he was going to the king's court to appeal to Xerxes personally as one of his officials. But that seems to me to be a little bit impossible. He's dressed in sackcloth. You can't even go through the gate dressed in sackcloth. And also Mordecai knows that the edicts of Persian kings are irrevocable. The Jews were going to get annihilated no matter what he said. But perhaps he's not thinking that way. Maybe he's so overwhelmed with grief, he just goes and says, I don't care what the law of the ancient Medes and Persians say about the law being irrevocable, I'm still going to go ask that he please not do this horrible genocide. Well, that's how Mordecai took the decree. If we look in verse 3, we see the Jews in the outlying provinces from Susa. There was over 100 provinces in the Persian Empire. Great mourning, fasting, no mention of praying. Adam Clark points that out. But to me, if somebody's fasting, they're praying too. I don't have a problem with no praying being mentioned. Verse 3 says that many Jews at the provinces lay on sackcloth and ashes. That means they went to sleep on sackcloth and ashes after wailing all day long. Day and night, mourning amongst the Jews. We go to Esther 4, verses 4 through 5. Then Esther's maidens and her eunuchs came and told her, and the queen writhed in great anguish. And she sent garments to clothe Mordecai that he might remove his sackcloth from him, but he did not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hathach from the king's eunuchs. That's H-A-T-H-A-C-H, Hathach. Then Esther summoned Hathach from the king's eunuchs, whom the king had appointed to attend her. And Esther ordered Hathach to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. Why is everybody crying? Why is everybody so upset? Well, actually, she already knew that because the eunuchs had told her about the eunuch because the queen had writhed in great anguish. Writhed. That's a great word there. That shows she was really upset. But what she's asking is not what is going on, but she wants details about what this edict is all about. What caused it? Maybe how we can get out from under it? Why did Esther send clothes to Mordecai so that he might remove his sackcloth? Because she wanted Mordecai to get out of the sackcloth so he could come into the king's palace and communicate with her somehow. But Mordecai did not accept those clothes. Why? Maybe he was too overwhelmed by grief, as John Gill says. Maybe he didn't want to appear cheerful given the circumstances. He was just so grief-stricken, he was not going to change out of his sackcloth. He's not going to come talk to Esther in the city, in the king's palace. Now let's look at this Hathach. I'm going to read you from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown how people communicated with women in the harem. Remember, the king's relatives stayed in the harem, the woman's quarters, the women's quarters. It wasn't just concubines with whom he had sex five times a day. That's mythical. The harem contained the women folk belonging to the king, and so Esther was in this harem. This would be probably the second harem, not the first harem. Here's what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say. Communication with the women in the harem is very difficult to be obtained, and only through the medium of the keepers. That's the eunuchs. The chief eunuch receives the message from the lips of the queen. So Esther tells Hathach, go talk to Mordecai for me. Excuse me. Esther receives the message from Hathach. Mordecai is telling you, says Hathach, that there's been a terrible edict issued. Well, that message goes from Hathach to some inferior office of the seraglio, the harem. When the commission is executed, this inferior office, the subaltern, communicates it to the superintendent, that would be the chief eunuch, Hathach, by whom it is delivered to the queen. In other words, there's a series of steps, messengers, that the message goes through to get from the outside of the harem to the inside of the harem. This chief eunuch, in this case is Hathach, usually an old man who has recommended himself by a long course of faithful service, is always appointed by the king, but it is his interest as well as his duty to ingratiate himself with the queen also. Accordingly, we find Hathach rendering himself very serviceable in carrying on those private communications with Mordecai, who was thereby enabled to enlist Esther's powerful influence. All of the details of the Book of Esther comport perfectly with customs in Persian courts. Now, this Hathach had been appointed by the king, Xerxes, to attend to Esther. Adam Clark adds the cynical comment, yes, Hathach attended Esther, and he was also appointed to spy on Esther, and I don't doubt that, given the politics of the Persian harem. We go now to Esther 4, verses 6 through 8. So Hathach went out to Mordecai to the city square in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him all that had happened to him, and the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him, that's Mordecai gave Hathach, a copy of the text of the edict which had been issued in Susa for their destruction, that he, Hathach, might show Esther and inform her and to order her to go to the king. Mordecai wants to order Esther. He's telling Hathach to, in Mordecai's name, to order Esther to go into the king to implore his favor and to plead with him for her people. So remember, Mordecai is still out in the city square in the midst of the city in front of the king's gate. He has not gone into the king's gate yet at the royal palace. He meets Hathach. He tells Hathach about what happened. He even tells Hathach the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to pay to Xerxes for the privilege of annihilating the Jews. Why this detail? Well, it was in order for Mordecai to let Hathach know how bent on the destruction of the Jews that Haman actually was. It also shows that he's a master of detail here, that this is not made up. This is true. It has the indicia of truth about it because of all the details. Now, that money, which was, I think it was 10,000 talents. Yeah, it was 10,000 talents. Haman had offered to pay to Xerxes. When Xerxes had responded back, the king said to Haman, this is in Esther 3:11, the silver is yours and the people also to do with them as you please. Now, that's a little ambiguous. Xerxes may have meant that the silver was Haman's, the silver that was going to be plundered from the Jews on Adar the 13th. That silver was to be given to Haman so he could put it back in the treasury so that Xerxes would not lose any tax money because dead Jews wouldn't be paying taxes anymore. Or it could be another option is that Xerxes is just remitting the requirement for Haman to pay 10,000 talents of silver to the treasury. He's just saying, forget it. You don't need to do that. Just go wipe out the Jews. Now, some hypercritical person might ask, well, if Xerxes had remitted the payment, if that's what he meant by saying the silver is yours, why did Mordecai mention the amount? If it's remitted, it's not in effect anymore. Well, it could be that Mordecai may not have known of the remission, but it doesn't really matter whether the amount had been remitted or not. The amount still shows Haman's evil intent. That sucker was willing to pay 10,000 talents of his own money, 10,000 talents of silver in his own money, in order for the privilege of executing the Jews. To put it in the vernacular, Haman was full of the devil. Now in verse 8, Mordecai has a copy of this terrible edict that was sent out in Nisan of the 12th year of Ahasuerus. How did Mordecai get a copy of the text? Remember, this edict had been published all over the empire, translated into the proper script and proper tongues, so that even the common people could know. Everybody knew about the edict. Now, it could be that Esther didn't know because the women were kept secluded from political goings on. So Mordecai gave Hathach a copy of the text to deliver to Esther, to inform her. And then Mordecai also told Hathach, tell Esther that I, Mordecai, order her to go to the king to implore for mercy. Now, that raises a question. How does Mordecai order, or as the Holman Christian Study Bible puts it, command? How does Mordecai command a queen of Persia to do anything? As Jameson Fawcett and Brown says, this language is exceedingly strong, as it can scarcely be supposed that Mordecai was still using authority over Esther as his adopted daughter. He must be considered as imploring rather than commanding her in the name of her brethren and in the name of her God to make a direct appeal to the feelings of her royal husband. Well, Jameson Fawcett Brown says it can scarcely be supposed that Mordecai is still appealing to Esther as his adopted daughter. I don't think so. He raised the girl. It was his daughter. I don't think it's hard to suppose that Mordecai was relying on his authority as a father. We need to remember that they were first cousins, probably not second cousins. They were probably first cousins, but Mordecai had adopted Esther as his daughter. Now, Hathach was to deliver this decree to Esther in the harem, and he was supposed to inform her of the decree. That's the NASB translation. But the NIV Study Bible and the Holman Christian Study Bible have explain it to her. So he, Hathach, was to take the decree into the harem that he might show it to Esther and to explain it to her. Why would Esther need to have the decree explained? Well, this is what the NIV Study Bible says. Two speculations. One, perhaps the legal terminology was difficult. Well, I don't know. The decree had been posted for all the common people to see all through the provinces. They didn't seem to need somebody to interpret the law. NIV Study Bible says another possibility is that Esther, because she was a woman, had not been taught to read, and so she would have to have it explained to her. That's probably a little bit more reasonable. So Hathach leaves the gate of the king's palace. He leaves the city square and goes back through the gate of the king's palace, back into the temple complex, to the palace complex, and he goes back to the harem. So we read in verses 9 through 11, Hathach came back and related Mordecai's words to Esther. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and ordered him to reply to Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that for any man or woman who comes to the king to the inner court who is not summoned, he has but one law, that he be put to death. unless the king holds out to him the golden scepter so that he may live. And I have not been summoned to come to the king for these 30 days. So Esther draws back a little bit when she is ordered by Mordecai to go speak to the king as an advocate for the Jews. She is telling Hathach to tell Mordecai, hey, I could get killed for this because you're not supposed to go see the king. And everybody knows this. Everybody in Persia knows it. Even the common people, even people out in the sticks, they know that if you go to the king and he hasn't summoned you, he can snuff you out. Well, what was the purpose of this law? It actually made a lot of sense. It was for the king's safety, security measure. It was also to instill awe and reverence for people in the court. You don't go to the king unless he calls you. And remember, Persian monarchs were considered divine, as Jameson Fawcett Brown says. This is the age of Oriental despotism. The East is famous for this, separating the kings out from the people to make everybody think they were godlike. Also, plotters and schemers and hangers-on and people harassing him all the time would be kept away. So there was reason for this law. I think it's a little harsh that the sanction for violating that law was to be put to death, but that's the way it was back then in the ancient Persian Empire. Now, Esther points out to Mordecai via Hathach that Xerxes had not summoned her to his bed for 30 days, or to even see her for 30 days. It looks like Xerxes was not as pleased with Esther as he was before. We read in chapter 2 of Esther, verse 17, the king loved Esther more than all the other women. She won more favor and approval from him than did any of the other young women. He placed the royal crown on her head and made her queen in place of Vashti. That was in the 7th year of Xerxes. This is the 12th year, so that's 4.5 years earlier. Xerxes was really smitten with Esther, but the time of infatuation was past. The bloom was off the rose. And now he decided to not see Esther for 30 days. So that made Esther's job, was already hard enough. Now it was even harder because the king was not so hot on her as he was before. Now let's look at some reasons why Xerxes had chosen not to see Esther for 30 days. Adam Clark suggests one reason may have been that Haman perhaps had poisoned Xerxes' mind against Esther. We see Haman drinking with Xerxes in a feast in the last verse of the preceding chapter, chapter 3. So he may have been communicating with Xerxes. Haman must have known of Esther's relationship with Mordecai. I don't think that was secret. And now Haman knows that Mordecai is a Jew. Well, since Mordecai is a Jew, his adopted daughter Esther must be a Jew. That means Xerxes, your wife is a Jew, and these people are rebels. How did Haman know that Mordecai was a Jew? Because in the last chapter, chapter 3, verse 4, we read this. Now it was when they had spoken daily to him, that means the fellow officials of Xerxes had spoken daily to Mordecai, and Mordecai would not listen to them, that they told Haman, wouldn't listen to them, and agreed to bow down to Haman. And these officials told Haman to see whether Mordecai's reason would stand. And so Mordecai was ratted out by his fellow officials. For he had told them that he was a Jew, and that's why he wasn't bowing down. This has nothing to do with politics. I'm not starting a rebellion. I just can't, because Jews can only worship the one God, Yahweh. And his fellow officials rewarded him for his honesty by turning him over to Haman. So now Haman knows that Mordecai is a Jew, and since I'm sure he knew that Mordecai was Esther's adopted father, now he knows that Esther is a Jew and she's the queen, and maybe we better tell Xerxes. That's a good speculation. However, it is possible that Xerxes still had no problem with Esther, that he still didn't know she was Jewish, that Haman had not told him that she was Jewish, and that the reason he had laid off for 30 days calling Esther is he had a great deal of concubines to keep him happy. Remember, he had that old first harem full of all these beautiful young women, these virgins, that he could deflower at his pleasure. Oh, what a life that boy lived. And another reason why, in my humble opinion, that Xerxes still didn't have a problem with Esther, and perhaps didn't even know she was Jewish, was because he was pleased to see her when she did show up to see him, which we'll see in the next chapter, chapter 5, verse 2. When the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, she obtained favor in his sight, and the king extended to Esther the golden scepter which was in his hand. In other words, Esther, I don't want you to die. Come see me. so Esther came near and touched the top of the scepter. So, Xerxes doesn't sound like he's lost favor with her, although it is possible that he had lost favor with her in the last 30 days, but upon seeing her being so beautiful standing there, he changed his mind. You know how men are about the way women look. So that could be. At any rate, it's been 30 days, and Esther's worried because she's thinking, he might not be happy if I come begging for the life, for the lives of the Jews, and for the life of my adopted father, Mordecai. So we turn now to Esther 4, verses 12 through 14. Esther's response was reported to Mordecai. Mordecai told the messenger, doesn't say it was Hathach this time, might have been somebody else. Mordecai told the messenger to reply to Esther, "Don't think that you will escape the fate of all the Jews, Esther, because you are in the king's palace. If you keep silent at this time, liberation and deliverance will come to the Jewish people from another place. But you and your father's house will be destroyed." And of course, her father's house, that would be Mordecai. "Who knows, perhaps you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." Well, Esther is hesitant about going to see Xerxes, and she lets that hesitancy be known to Mordecai by messenger, and Mordecai comes up with good arguments why she should indeed go see Xerxes. He tells Esther, "You have nothing left to lose. Don't think you'll escape the fate of all the Jews. Don't think you're not going to get killed and exterminated just because you are in the king's palace and are queen. That is the law of the ancient Persians and Medes, and it cannot be gainsaid. It cannot be contradicted. You're going to die, so you might as well go in there and give it your best shot. You've got nothing to lose." Now, note that this somewhat lessens the amount of bravery that Esther exhibited. Many people always point out correctly that Esther was indeed brave to go to Xerxes, but if you say, well, that's true, but she didn't have anything to lose, that sort of takes away a little bit from her bravery, but not too much. Now, Adam Clark suggests that Mordecai's speech here, or his message, that Esther, you're not going to escape dying at the hand of Xerxes, that sort of indicates that Haman knew something of the relationship of Mordecai and Esther, which we speculated before that he did. It was just speculation, though. But the fact that Mordecai is concerned that Xerxes is going to kill Esther because she's Jewish, that indicates, as Clark points out, that Haman must realize now that Esther is Jewish because he knows about Mordecai. And Mordecai is pointing that out to Esther. He's saying, look, you're going to die too as a Jew. Why? He doesn't say this, but the implication is Xerxes, the king, is going to know that you're a Jew, because I have been outed. NIV Study Bible also speculates that possibly some of Esther's attendants may have suspected she was a Jew, and just because she was queen, that would not protect her from being a Jew. And all we have to do is look at how Xerxes treated Vashti. He deposed her for no reason except that Vashti, his first queen, would not come out into a drunken banquet to be ogled by a bunch of drunken courtiers. He divorced her. So Xerxes was the type of king that could really do Esther in, kill her even, or depose her, or do something bad, banish her maybe. So she was in a bad situation, and she did the right thing. She went to see him, as we'll see in the next chapter. Mordecai continues to convince Esther to go to Xerxes. In verse 14, he says, look, if you keep silent, Esther, deliverance is going to come to the Jewish people from another place. Well, what's this other place that the deliverance is going to come from? Well, the NIV Study Bible speculates, and many others also, that the other place is talking about heaven, from God. Deliverance is going to come to the Jewish people from Yahweh if you decide not to go speak to Xerxes. Now, of course, that relates to the controversy that I mentioned in the audio concerning chapter 1. There's a controversy in the book of Esther why God is never mentioned in the book. And some people say, well, he's mentioned here. The other place is God. The euphemism is used here because the author of Esther wanted to stay low and not get in trouble with the Persian authorities. And so they use the euphemism. I think that's reasonable. I'm going to take another place, meaning heaven, from God. Deliverance is going to come. And notice how confident that Mordecai is that deliverance actually will come to the Jewish people. Well, Esther, even if you don't do it, God's going to do it, probably because of all those covenant promises. Land, multitude of offspring, blessing to the all nations, to all the nations of the world. If the Jews get wiped out, how's that going to happen? But Mordecai goes back to the here and now and says, Esther, you know, maybe God put you on the throne so you could help out. As it turns out, Mordecai was speculating exactly accurately. God had put Esther on the throne to save the Jewish people, because that was quite remarkable that a Jew would become queen of Persia. We go now to verses 15 through 17, Esther chapter 4, and we will finish this chapter. Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. They're sending messages back and forth from the harem to Mordecai at the palace gate in the city square. Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, "Go and assemble all the Jews who can be found in Susa and fast for me. Don't eat or drink for 3 days, day or night. I and my female servants will also fast in the same way. After that, I will go to the king, even if it is against the law. If I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went and did everything Esther had ordered him. This is interesting. We just discussed how Mordecai could order the queen of Persia to go talk to Xerxes, and now the queen of Persia is ordering her father to get everybody together to fast. Now, that doesn't mean that they were all going to assemble at one place and fast in one place. That would have raised all kinds of suspicion. But he got them together to communicate with them to go fast in your house privately. I'm sure, as John Gill points out, that's what is meant here. And they're going to fast for 3 days and nights without drinking water. Ooh, a food and water fast. I've gone 3 days without eating, and I found that extraordinarily difficult with my high metabolism. But 3 days with no water and no food, that's a serious fast, folks. Application point here. If you're about to do something big and dangerous, it's a good idea to fast in advance. Not required, but I think it's a good idea. Now, when would this fast occur? Well, it could have occurred during the Passover. Remember, Nisan was when the lots were cast. And that's also the same month of Passover. So the lots were cast in Nisan, and the lots determined that Adar, at the end of the year, was going to be the date to execute the Jews. But the problem was saying that this fast would occur during Nisan, the first month, as soon as that edict was sent out, because the edict was sent out right after the lots were cast, is that the Passover is a time of joy, not a time of fasting. Well, we know that the latest time for the fast cannot be after the king allowed the Jews a retaliatory edict to go kill their attackers. That happens in Esther 8, verse 9. So the king's scribes were called at that time in the third month, that is the month Sivan, on the 23rd day. Well, obviously the fast has worked by then, so it's somewhere between the first and the third month of the 12th year of Xerxes that this fast occurred. Once again, Adam Clark suggest that it is strange that we hear nothing of prayer and we don't hear anything about God. Well, I think it's reasonable to assume that once people begin fasting, they're praying too. It all goes together. The NIV Study Bible agrees with me and says this: Esther's request that they all fast was no doubt a reference to prayer to the Lord on her behalf. Along with Esther's fast, we see there was also going to be a fast of Esther's female servants. In verse 16, that suggests that Esther's handmaidens were Jews also, because I don't think they'd be fasting if they weren't Jews. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished chapter 4 of Esther. We are now ready to go to chapter 5 of Esther in our next audio, verses 1 through 14, and we will see how Haman plans to hang Mordecai. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.